Today's presenter is Beverly Kingsley. Beverly is an experienced software engineer working with IBM Webster MQ Level 2 support team in Raleigh, North Carolina. Beverly joined IBM 19 years ago after spending 5 years on ExxonMobil as an IMS systems programmer. She has a wealth of mainframe experience, having worked with IBM ZOS, Kix Level 2 team for 8 years before moving to MQ. Her support background and her 11 years in MQ give her skills to effectively diagnose all types of Webster MQ problems. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Beverly.
Thank you, Elijah. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on where you are. This presentation is strictly problem determination from the Webster MQ for ZOS perspective. Okay. Next slide. Okay. Slide 2, please. This is the agenda, which I'm sure you're familiar with, since it was published earlier, so I'll just skip over it. Next slide, slide 3. Okay. These are the topics that I want to cover. Some scenarios illustrating performance problems we have worked with. Typical channel problems we have diagnosed, guidelines of basic MQ SSL channel configuration and setup, and lastly, the documentation required if IBM support help is needed. Next slide, please. Slide number 4. This starts the performance topics. Some performance problems, in my opinion, are very difficult to diagnose. It all depends on your computing environment and the benchmark, service level agreement, and expectation you set. There are many factors that can affect your MQ performance measurements. There are different approaches to looking at these problems. It all depends on the symptoms. So before you get MQ support involved, there are some basic things you can do to help yourself. Ensure you have followed the recommendations and guidelines given in the MQ performance support packs. MP16 is a capacity planning and tuning guide for WebSphere and Q for ZOS. It gives you advice on all the tunable aspects of MQ and Z. MP1B is the printing and interpretation of statistics and accounting records. It provides statistics information and processing within the queue manager, and also accounting information about individual applications and channel usage. Both the statistics and accounting information are written to the ZOS SMS facility. And support pack MP1D and MP1E provides us performance support for MQ version 5 and version 6, respectively. Okay. Make use of monitoring tools such as the MegaMan and Strobe to help you identify problem areas. Use the Webster MQ support URL to search for performance-related PTFs and apply the ones that are applicable to your MQ environment. Search for performance text notes that have symptoms similar to yours and implement the recommendations given. Make use of red books and white papers written on MQ performance. And if you think the performance problem is in your network, get your networking folks involved. If you have done everything to tune your MQ system and the problem is still there, then MQ support may help you. Next slide, please. Slide number 5. Okay. This is the first of the performance problem. Customer observed ICPU in the channel initiator address space, which they found through their monitoring tool. They noticed that the system channel SYNQ had over 2,000 messages on it. The strobe report also confirms that the high CPU in the channel initiator address space and channel initiator job log showed no supporting messages. So they took dump of master and chin address spaces. Next slide, please. Slide number 6. We analyzed the dump using IPCS, and it showed the same process traversing through many pages and holding on to and releasing locks and latches looking for a specific message on the sync queue. The sync queue had 308 lock requests. The dump also showed the persistent scavenger was holding on to locks and latches that the chain process needed. We found the sync queue had the same number of messages observed by the customer. It is defined on page set 0, and it was not indexed. We also found other system queues defined on page set 0. This explains why the tin process and the scavenger were competing for the same locks and latches. Page set 0 was defined to buffer pool 0, and buffer pool 0 was allocated with 4,004K buffers. So the statistics in the dump showed several IOs to DASB, indicating that the buffer pool 0 was too small. Next slide, please. Slide number 7. Okay. To resolve the problem, we recommended that the system channel sync queue be changed to index type of message ID, as this will improve channel throughput. The queue attribute index type was introduced in version 5, which allows the queue manager to expedite the MQ get operation on a queue. The sample job, CSQ4, INSX, that came with version 5, defines the system channel sync queue with index type of message ID. Some customers miss running this job when they migrate their MQ to a higher release, as in this case. And by the way, you can change the index type of a queue immediately, even if it contains messages or is open without waiting for a restart of the queue manager. So make sure you run sample job CSQ4 INX. We also recommended that payset 0 should be used for object definitions only. System queues should be moved to paysets other than payset 0. The sample job CSQ4 INYS has storage class system mapped to payset 1. We recommended increasing buffer pool 0 as it was allocated too low, and to refer to support pack MP16 for recommendations on how to tune buffer pools. If a buffer pool is too small, it is shown on the console log by message CSQ P020EASY. In version 6, CSQY220I is issued periodically to indicate the amount of private region storage in use and the amount remaining. So make use of this information to tune your buffers. Okay. In version 6, you can change buffer pool allocation dynamically via the alter buffer pool command. In V5, you'll need to restart the queue manager. Next slide, please. Slide number 8. Slide 8, please. Okay. In the second performance scenario, customer used support pack 1B to interpret NQ performance data after making changes to his application. He noticed that the number of times a request was made to force the log buffers to disk and the number of read log requests satisfied from in-storage buffers have significantly increased. So according to support path MP1B, the read buff, the number of requests satisfied from in-storage buffer value is large. It means application are backing out and not committing requests. It might be an application problem, and it recommends that you use the queue level statistics to identify which tasks are backing out rather than committing, However, Custom observed there were no significant changes on the queue level statistics. SMS reports showed many MQIP API calls, but no backout statistics. Support path MO12, the log extract program, was used to print the log, but no backout messages were seen. I want to point out that in version 6, CSQ1 log P contains the extract function, and in MQV5, the support path MO12 provides this extract function. Next slide, please. Slide number 8, number 9, rather. Our comments are, the increase in the number of times a request was made to force the log buffers to disk is usually due to an increase in traffic. This could either be more local application running or an increase in traffic from the chinet. More client work could result in more log write force. Putting or getting more messages out of sync point cause implicit commits, which will increase the number of log forces. There are log forces doing backouts as well as commits, and these backouts can be explicit or implicit. So if your application issues any NQ back calls, then it will show up in the accounting class 3 records. Next slide, please. Slide 10, please. And on the channel, you can get log write force when a channel issues commit when there are no more messages to process or the number of messages equals the value of hash size. If channels are busier, then it is possible to get more messages in a batch, and if the number of commits may go down. So if the channel ends while transmitting a batch, the messages are implicitly rolled back. This does not show up in the class 3 accounting data since an explicit backout was not performed. Next slide, slide 11. Okay. Our recommendations are to check the NQ job logs and syslogs for any messages relating to channels tapping or starting abnormally. Make sure the application is committing appropriately. Use the log extractor program to print the NQ log so as to identify applications that are backing out frequently. And note that the value of log write force and read buffer implied blackouts are from both application and internal NQ processing. Next slide, please. Slide number 12. It's the third of the performance scenario. The customer reports slowdown in a CICS transaction during peak periods. Their SMS accounting report showed 12 to 14 seconds response time from a put one request for their CICS transaction. It is more pronounced during times of heavy volume. Several CICS regions and various transactions are affected. Other MQ applications appear not to be affected. Okay. MQ Master Lab showed high CPU. They took documentation, dumps of master, chin, and CICS suggest faces, and also SMS and class 3 accounting data. Next slide, please. Slide number 13. We analyzed the documentation. We found several CICS tasks in NQ series task switch weight. The resource name is task switch, and the resource type is NQ series. This is shown in this dispatcher summary in the CICS address space. This happens when a CICS application issues an NQ API call that causes the CICS Resource Manager Interface, or RMI, to pass control to the MQ task-related user exit, the ICSC true. The wait resumes when the MQ API call completes. That is, control is passed back to CICS. Fifth trace showed several EXT 1005 and clock interrupt entries in the ZOS virtual storage with PSW pointing into the MQ security modules. These entries indicate the high CPU the customer observed. We also found that subpool 229T7 in the local subpool was severely used. MQ security blocks are stored in this subpool. Note that this storage is not allocated from the MQ job region size. The dump also showed over 16,000 MQ storage manager pool header blocks. These blocks are for the security RMID, resource manager ID, that contain the security control blocks, HRAI. HRAI block represents a cache successful access by a user ID to a single resource. It is released when the user ID times out or is manually re-verified. The SMS class 3 accounting data showed delays during the NQ put 1 processing, and this shows that the delays were due to contention from many security lashes associated with a single user ID. And finally, we found that the security timeout and interval settings were the default values. Next slide, please. Slide number 14. We recommend tuning the security settings in NQ. The timeout is a time period in minutes that an unused user ID and its associated resources can remain within the queue manager. And the interval is a time period in minutes between checks for user ID and their associated resources to determine whether the timeout has lapsed. If the settings are too high, it will cause the security cache to build up. And if it is too low, it will cause additional overhead due to calls made to the external security manager if the user's information is not in the cache. Another suggestion is to assign a unique user ID to each CICS region ID, to each CICS region. An alternative solution is to give the CICS region user ID control access to the res level profile, in which case no security checks will be made. Another suggestion is if security usage varies widely between frequent users and those who only sign on once, consider splitting the work for those users to a different queue manager. Next slide, please. Slide number 15. Okay, we move on to the channel problems. And before we get into typical scenarios, I have a few pages of things I should note before we start. Distributed queuing messages are issued to the TINIP job log, and almost all the messages begin with CSQX, followed by 3 integers plus a character E for error or I for informational message. X is a component letter that represents the TINIP process. Most messages beginning with CSQX20 are issued by MQ to report an error or errors returned from the transport layer or an error connecting to the network. These errors are usually not an MQ problem, but rather problems in the transport protocol or the network. In the same way, MQ issues messages beginning with CSQX6 to report return codes from system SSL or problems in the SSL channel configuration. Next slide, please. Slide number 16. There is a wraparound line trace that exists for each channel in a channel initiator address space. You cannot disable it, and it applies to both TCP and LU62 channels. There are two ways to access this information. One, by including the CSQ snap DD statement in the TMIT JCL and pointing it to a data set in which to dump the line trace. It gets dumped after you start the TMIT trace, then issues the display channel status safe command stating the name of the channel or channels for which the line trace is required. And the second way is to take a dump of the TMIT address space and format it with the IPCS command, verbex, CSQX, CBRD. In single quote, you have your subsystem equals the subsystem ID of your queue manager, and this channel status equals 3. The line trace contains the last few inbound or outbound flows and outbound flows of each running channel. It is ideal for problems where a channel or channels appear to be hung, or it helps us identify if the channel problem is within NQ or not. Next slide, please. Slide number 17. Slide 17 gives an example of a line trace using IPCS to format it. Notice the timestamp on the left, followed by the word inbound. The TSH I cache on the right. The layout of the TSH structure is undocumented. However, you can look for unique words in your data in the iCache section on the right and correlate it with the corresponding network traces. Unfortunately, this example doesn't show user data in the iCache section on the right, but in a full line trace, you would see portions of your data which you can use to correlate with your network traces. Next slide, please. Slide number 18. Okay. This is the first of the channel problem diagnosed. Mm-hmm. Customer reported his sender channel was hung after a network outage. His sender channel is on ZOS and the receiver channel is on Windows. The network error happened on Windows side, so the receiver channel ended up normally. Any network failure reported to a channel will cause the channel to end. If the network failure is not reported to the channel will not end. The channel relies on the lower level communication functions to report any network outages. No errors were reported back to the sender end on ZOS, so the sender channel remains running, unaware that the receiver has ended. It seems stuck with messages on its exit queue, so the customer had to use the stop mode forced command to end it. Next slide, please. Slide number 19. These were the settings found in our analysis. Okay. Just a few words on some of these parameters. Adapt MCA allows the channel blocking receive processing as a result of a network outage to be terminated or replaced by a new connection request. And the adapt check specifies which elements are checked to determine whether the new connection should be adapted. Now, TCP/IP has its own heartbeat protocol called Keep Alive, allowing it to recognize network failures. MQ implements the use of this function via the TCP keep parameter on its expands in V5 and for V6 on the queue manager attributes. On ZOS only, this can be configured at the channel level via the KAINT parameter. The heartbeat interval channel attributes controls how often A sending end of a channel should check that the receiver is okay when there are no messages to send. So, from the DAC, we found that a .mca was set to yes, a .check set to queue manager name, which indicates just check the queue manager name, and if it matches, then the new incoming connection is allowed to be adopted. TCP keep was set to no. Okay. And on the channel, KAINT was set to auto, the default, which means the actual KAINT value used is 60 seconds more than the negotiated heartbeat. So the heartbeat interval was set to 300 seconds, which is 5 minutes. Next slide, please. Slide number 20. This is what we recommend. In order for TCP Keep Alive to clear the channel, TCP Keep must be set to yes on the Chinit X farm in V5 and in V6 on the queue manager attribute TCP Keep. In this case, the TCP Keep was set to no, which means that the KAINT value on the channel definition was ignored, and therefore only the defined heartbeat value was used. But in this case, this did not help as messages were on the XNIC queue. Remember that the heartbeat interval controls how often the sender channel checks that the receiver is okay when there are no messages on the queue. Or no messages to send. Next slide, please. Slide 21. This is the second of the channel problems, where a customer noticed that they have several orphaned ServerCon channels which they cannot clear with the SAP mode force command. Next slide, slide 22. There are several reasons why a ServerCon channel can become orphaned. One, if the client application code has an indefinite or excessive wait interval on the MQ get call, or if the put-in application has not committed the message, or the connection is broken, in which case TCP/IP will return an error to NQ, which NQ will report on its job log, or the client application may not be performing disconnect and went on to do other work. The stop mode force may or may not clear the ServerCon channel that is waiting in a get wait. It depends on if IO is active or not. So if no channel IO is active, when the wait completes, the send of the NQ get reply will be aborted and the channel will terminate. If the ServerCon channel is waiting and keep alive to clear it, in this case, IO is active and the receiver process will be woken up, which then will terminate the channel. Next slide, please. Slide 23. What we recommend is that in both version 5 and V6, if the client application issues an NQ get wait with unlimited or excessive wait interval, there is nothing NQ can do to override this. And this will result in orphaned ServerCon channels. So we recommend to use shorter wait intervals. If the connection is broken or the client machine is powered off, TCP Keep Alive can be used to clear the channel, provided TCP IP Keep Alive is enabled, TCP Keep is set to yes, and KINT is set to an appropriate value on the channel. In V6, heartbeat interval is supported on ServerCon channels. This heartbeat is a short message sent to the client connection during NQ get to check that it is still available. It is only sent when there is no other activity on the channel for at least the heartbeat seconds. At this point, I'd like to point out a couple of APARs in this area. In V6, before APAR PK 36168, ServerCon channels incorrectly ignore the value set to KAINT, and so the default TCP/IP keep alive value is used, which is usually 2 hours. And if KINT equal auto and the server can channel, it will essentially stay alive indefinitely. So APAR PK51598 corrects this problem. Next slide, please. Slide 24. This is the last of the channel scenarios. The customer reported this channel will not start. Messages were building up on the transmission queue. Message CSQ X 526EZ, message sequence error for the channel associated with the transmission queue was issued to the Trinet log. Get is was disabled on the transmission queue and triggering is turned off. This suggests that the channel was started via message when messages arrive on the Ethernet queue. Slide 25. We investigated the master and channel job logs sent in, and we found that channel initiator startup, at channel initiator startup, message CSQ X 517EZ, error in system channel sync queue was issued from the same channel. This indicates there were more than one set of synchronization information messages on the sync queue, and that for that channel. This can happen for one of several reasons. The user may have cleared all messages from the sync queue, or changed the IP address on the channel, or manually reset the receiver channel sequence number, or redefine the sender channel. So on the next slide, slide 26, we recommend that when making changes to the channel configuration, make sure both sides of the channel are clean. If the channel fails with sequence error, try resetting the sequence error appropriately according to the send and the expected sequence number given in the CSQ X 526EZ message. Once there is an invalid or bad record for the channel on the sync queue, it will cause the channel to fail at startup. So there is no APAR to remove this bad entry. So you will need to run a sync queue utility, which can be obtained from level 2 to delete the bad record. Now, at this point, I'd like to point out an error in the fallback code. If you migrate your version 5.3.1 queue manager with the fallback PTF applied to V6 and then fall back to version 5.3.1, your sender channels will fail to start with message sequence error. In all cases, the sender channel will fail with the CSQ X526EG reporting sent equal 1, expected equal some number. Now, APAR PK16673 fixes this error. Okay. Next slide, please. Slide number 27. This slide deals with diagnosing MQ-SSL channel issues that I want to start off with, hints and tips for setting it up for the first time. So the key to getting it working for the first time is to make sure your initial configuration is simple. Most problems encounter or either MQ configuration errors or problems with SSL setup. Use support pack MO4 to help you set up your SSL channel environment. It is the WebSphere MQ SSL wizard that generates a set of instructions to enable you to define an SSL channel based on information entered in a series of panels. It generates both platform-specific commands for creating the certificates and the MQSC commands to define the MQ channels. Use self-signed certificates to start with. They do not involve an external CA and therefore cost nothing. They are easy to generate and are handy for testing. You must understand the client-server SSL terminology. This is not the same as MQ client and server. Simply put, an SSL client is the initiator of a conversation analogous to the MQ sender channel. And the server is the recipient, similar to the MQ receiver channel. Use one-way authentication to start with. It is the authentication of the server certificate during the initial connection from the client. Two-way authentication is the additional authentication of the client certificate by the server during the initial handshake. Don't use pair name checking to start with. This is an optional check of the distinguished name or generic portion of it of the certificate belonging to the pair, the other side of the channel. Don't use certificate revocation list to start with. This is a list of revoked or expired certificates compiled by the CA that you need to download to an LDAP, which you'll need to maintain. Next slide, please. Slide 28. I want to talk about some fundamental diagnostic guidelines that you should use for SSL. Always check the SYN job logs, syslogs, and error logs on both ends of the connection for errors or messages relating to SSL channels. Take note of whatever the problem, take note whether the problem is on channel startup or during channel flow. Always carefully check the contents of the key ring or key repositories. And also carefully check if the SSL configuration parameters are correct on both ends. If there's an error issue while using SSL channel, it would be reported somewhere on the log. Next slide, please. Slide 29. The next few slides are a checklist to go through to make sure you have set everything up correctly. Starting with the queue manager, make sure SSL parameters you are using are enabled. And at the minimum, make sure the SSL key or parameter matches the name of the key ring that you define to the external security manager. To use SSL channels, you must specify at least two SSL subtasks via the SSL task parameter. Their prime purpose is to service SSL calls on behalf of channels. And on the channel definitions, check if a suitable encryption is set via the SSL ciphertext parameters. Both ends of the channel must specify the same ciphertext value. Check that the SSL client authentication, SSL CAuth parameter is set correctly. The default is required, which is two-way authentication. Note that this parameter is valid only on the SSL server end. If using SSL pair, make sure it matches the distinguished name of the certificate from the pair at the other end of the channel. Slide number 30. Before I talk about the contents of the keyring, just a few words about self-signed certificates. A self-signed certificate is a certificate in which the issuer and the subject names are the same. So in the simplest scenario, you can use a self-signed certificate as the key manager personal certificate with key usage equals handshake. In a more complex and lifelike scenario, you can create a self-signed certificate to act as your own CA and set up the key usage to cert sign. This certificate can then be used to sign your own generated key manager personal certificate. So, check the key ring contents. Check that the key manager personal certificate. Make sure the label name is in the correct format. as shown here on the slide. This is the label name standard on Z. Check the signer, issuer details, the distinguished name information. Check if it is correct. Is the queue manager personal certificate self-signed, or is it signed by a CA? Is the queue manager personal certificate key usage should be handshake. Is the signer certificate available on the other end? Was it signed by a CA, or was it self-signed? If it is a CA certificate, is it a part of a chain? The certificate chain typically begins with a server's public key certificate and ends with a certificate or authority root certificate. So make sure the chain is complete and that it ends with the root CA certificate. Check that no certificate in the chain is expired. And there's a error on the slide here. The key usage should set to cert file, not cert auth. Next page, please. Slide 31. Here's some other things that you need to check. The CHINET or channel initiator user ID should be the owner of the key ring unless it is shared or it's and it should have read access to profile big cert list ring in the facility class of the external security manager. Again, both ends of the channel must specify the same cipher specification. And if you make any changes to the key ring, an MQV file, the channel initiator will need to be restarted to pick up the changes. On V6, the changes can be implemented dynamically via the refresh security type SSL command. Now, if you're using ICFS, the integrated cryptographic service facility to store the private keys, make sure the service is available or ICS is started. If you are using queue sharing group, check if the queue manager personal certificate label name has the queue sharing group name as the last four characters and not the queue manager name. Slide 32, please. This is a diagram illustrating a one-way authentication using ServerCon ClientCon channel pair. The ServerCon channel is on ZOS and the MQ client channel is on Windows. Note that the SSL server is the ServerCon channel. And that there, and that's where the SSL CART is specified. If it is set to no, it's a one-way authentication where the server certificate is authenticated by the server. I'd like you to note the queue manager personal certificate on the ServerCon keyring, channel keyring, named Fred. It is signed by C.A. Harry. Notice that the signer, C.A. Harry, is in the key store and the Windows, in the Windows key store. Next slide, please. This is a diagram that illustrates a two-way authentication using sender-receiver channel pair going in both directions. Note that the SSL CART is specified on the receiver channel end, which is the SSL server end. It is set to yes, indicating that the server needs to also authenticate the client certificate. It will send the client certificate request. Notice the keyring with the key manager personal certificate Fred is signed by C.A. Harry. Notice that on the server end, CA signer Harry certificate is in the key store and the Windows side and vice versa. Next slide, please. The next few slides are documentation requirements if you need to escalate the problem to level 2. This slide states documentation that is required for performance problems. Yeah. If you can afford a trace overhead, increase the trace table to 999, the maximum. Start internal trace, or alternatively, you can send trace to GTF. Take dump of master and chin address spaces and the chin data space during the problem period. Send us the copy of master and chin logs. And if you have any monitoring reports, send them in also. Next page, please. Slide 35. The following slides are the documentation we need for channel problems. SYNCHESQ X20 messages indicate an error from the transport layer, then we'll need more than just a console dump to find the root cause. So we'll need a slip trap and the message to take a dump of master chain and TCP address spaces and their data spaces. We also need MQ tracing. Next slide, please. If you're using TCP channels, then you may need to get C-trace or packet trace. How to do this is documented in APAR II 12136. Turn MQ internal trace via the start command, start trace command, if you can afford tracing. Create the problem, take a dump of master chain and TCP address spaces and their data spaces. Stop trace after the dump is taken. Next slide, 37. If you're dealing with LU652, APPC, SNA channels, note that the flow of data goes through several layers, and therefore we'll need documentation from any of these components for problem isolation. So the data flows from MQ through APPC through VTAM into the network to the other side. So on the ZOS side, start APPC C-trace, take dump of master chain and APPC address space and the chain data space. When the trace is stopped, it will produce a dump of with the APPC data space. And on if you're on a distributed platform, collect line trace or API trace, and make sure you have matching documentation taken at the same time from both ends. We recommend that you also get your networking folks involved in channel problems that you think there is a problem in the network. Next slide, please. Slide 38. This slide documents the documentation required for SSL channel problems. Turn chin tracing on, and if SSL returns an error to MQ, MQ will issue the CSQ X6 message on its chin log. You'll need to set a slip trap on the CSQ X6 message and take a dump of the master chin and TCP address spaces and their data space. Documentation should be taken on both sides of the SSL connection at the same time. Now, if the problem, next slide, please. If the problem is with the keyring, follow this procedure to capture the problem within the SSL trace. Next slide, slide 40. If the problem is within SSL channel handshake, follow this procedure to capture the problem within the SSL trace. Next slide, please. Slide 41. If you'd like to format the SSL trace, you can do so using the IPCS command. But you need to ensure that SSL libraries is in the IPCS setlib concatenation. Then you use the IPCS command ctracecomp to format the trace. You can check the SSL handshake flow that is documented in the Westware MQ security guide. And if you need help, of course, send a trace in to us. Slide 42. Slide 42 has some useful Westware MQ websites. where you can search for known MQ problems, migration information. The manuals are there. You can submit PMRs to us, order MQ products, or you can search for PSP bucket, etc. The following slide, slide 43, has some additional welfare product resources. Now, I take this opportunity to turn the phone back to Elijah for any questions and answers.
Thank you, Beverly, for a great presentation. At this time, we conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the website Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Beverly, for presenting today.
You're welcome.